I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate this afternoon. A dinosaur mummy has been found in North Dakota. The fossilized duck-billed hadrosaur, nicknamed Dakota, still has skin, ligaments, tendons, possibly even some organs, and it gives scientists an unparalleled look at dinosaur anatomy. Paleontologist Dr. Philip Manning of Manchester University in England is studying Dakota, and he's with me now. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So how long ago did Dakota live, do you think?
Well, Dakota was around in rocks which are aged between 65 and 67 million years old, and it's aptly called the Hell Creek Formation.
And why is Hell Creek Formation aptly named?
Well, the biggest predator of all time is found in these rocks as well.
Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Gosh, I'm out of a job.
Well, as we mentioned when you just walked in, I have a 9-year-old and 12-year-old boy, and so dinosaurs are a big part of my life.
Yes, and unfortunately, your kids will grow up. I didn't. It's one of those things, paleontology.
Oh, they're hoping not to, actually.
Oh, I can't blame them, because it's a wonderful subject, and it's a fantastic way for kids to get interested in science. And I was bitten by the paleo bug when I was 7 years old, and I suppose I'm just a big kid now still playing with those dinosaurs.
So, you know, you've been in love with these giant creatures for a long time. Why is Dakota different? What was it about Dakota that you said, oh, there may be something here that may teach me something?
Well, Tyler Lyson, the gentleman who actually found it in 1999 when he was still at college, and he didn't realise that there was going to be skin there. It was only when he and his volunteers from the Marmot Research Foundation, which he set up a few years later, were digging it in 2004, that they came across some skin. And one of my students was working on the dig that year. She contacted me, and I got in contact with the organisation. The rest is history, as they say. We've worked together closely on this project, and Tyler's a remarkable young man.
And so it really, you know, when I read the article about this to my kids earlier in the week, one of them said, skin, is it real skin? So was the skin the element that made you think this is something unusual?
Absolutely. And you've hit the nail precisely on the head for the simple reason it is fossilized skin, not skin impressions. The skin actually has depth and structure to it. And we've been doing an awful lot of work analyzing the skin for the last few months. And this research will continue for years to come.
Now, if you're the parent of children who are passionate about dinosaurs, as I am, you read lots and lots of books about dinosaurs, some of which paint them bright colors. Some of them, it looks like their skin is scaly. What can you tell me about dinosaur skin from Dakota's skin?
We have a very monochrome view of what these animals would have looked like. Alas, colour does not fossilise. So we're left with the textures of the skin. And remarkably on this specimen, there is changes in texture of skin, the size of the scales around the arm, and there's portions on the tail as well. And some of this indicates some sort of banding or stripes. We're not talking zebra here. We're talking more tapir, so it's quite subtle. And this is part of, again, ongoing research. So it's very exciting stuff we're uncovering.
Stripes, that will be very exciting.
Well, I just think the thought of dinosaurs being battleship grey and green has been extremely tedious for years. And I remember as a child picking up these wonderful books on dinosaurs and being absolutely awestruck by these creatures and thinking, wow, maybe the colour could be a bit more interesting. Because look at animals today. They're wonderfully exciting. And, of course, the descendants of dinosaurs, the birds, are some of the most diverse. There's nearly 10,000 species of birds on the planet today. And look at the variety of birds, not only in their form and shape, but their colour. We would have seen this in dinosaurs as well.
Can I ask you a question that's not quite related to Dakota, but my son will be very happy if I ask this, because he's asked this for a long time. Birds now have been shown to be the descendants of dinosaurs, but they're warm-blooded. And we look at dinosaurs and we're told many of them were cold-blooded. How did that happen?
Well, the thing is, there's been a sort of a paradigm shift in the way we actually understand dinosaurs in the last 30 to 40 years. There was an absolutely wonderful book written by Dr. Bob Backer, which was all about sort of the thermoregulatory abilities of dinosaurs, whether they're warm or cold-blooded. And his work, and many people since, has suggested that they were warm-blooded animals, more like birds. More like birds than their sort of reptilian distant ancestors were. So we're learning a lot more, but it's still, we're dealing with tiny fragments of evidence, which we're having to reconstruct the picture of these animals with. The bones give us so many clues, but understanding their actual physiology and biology is still very, very hard to do.
One of the most interesting things about Dakota that I read about is that you didn't just find Dakota. There's a part of another animal there, too. Can you describe what's going on here?
Oh, this was fun. I remember on the excavation when we were finally lifting the body block, which weighed 10 tons. Now, Tyler and the MRF crew lifting this thing up.
What is a body block? Is it just like a giant piece of the earth that you've chunked out and know this is where the body is?
Exactly. We wanted to retain as much of the rock which actually encased, entombed our animal to preserve as much information. So as we carefully go through it in the lab, we can recover that. And when we lifted this specimen off the ground, I did joke with the National Geographic film crew who were watching. I said, well, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a T-Rex's open jaws biting the backside of our dinosaur and we find the open jaws underneath? But, of course, no such luck as that. However, when we started preparing the actual specimen, I got a phone call from the preparators and it said, well, we've found a hand. I said, oh, wonderful. Is it a hand of the dinosaur, of the hadrosaur? No. Wow. So I jumped on a plane, shot over to Hill City where the animal was being prepared, and lo and behold, I was shown this wonderful hand which was connected to the wrist and the upper arm. There was an arm of an animal poking through the block. We identified it as a crocodile.
Now, is it just sort of separate from the hadrosaur from Dakota, or was it actually within Dakota?
Well, it's actually sort of looks like it's pushing out from the side of Dakota, which is even more fascinating. It sort of have images of Alien here, with a sort of thing bursting out of John Hurt's stomach. Sorry for folks who are eating at this moment. But the key thing is here, we're trying to understand the relationship of these two organisms. Were they swept together in a flood, which coated them in this wonderful cloak of a just-so type of sediment that preserved this animal so beautifully? Or was the actual crocodile scavenging on the carcass, and did it get stuck against this body, and they were entombed together for over 65 million years? This is why we actually went down the route of having the blocks CT scanned using a huge X-ray scanner owned by NASA and run by Boeing down in California.
And what did you find from the CAT scan?
We found that it's very hard to scan such an enormous block because you're absolutely pushing the physics envelope. The physics of actually pushing X-rays through an 8,000-pound in weight block
of rock.
It's really tough. If you can imagine, when you have an X-ray, a body X-ray, a chest X-ray, you're probably getting equivalent of 3 to 4 rad, a split second of this dose of radiation. So it's not harmful to you, but it allows them to image with a detector on one side and a film on the other, rather detector on one side and source on the other X-ray source. We were using 3,000 rad, working with a gentleman called Jeff Anders, who is an absolute saint. He's a wonderful guy. The patience of... I've never met someone so patient, who is delicately tweaking the machinery to get out this information locked within the blocks.
And you must have to wear lead aprons about the size of New Jersey to get near this.
That's a pretty good appraisal, actually. There was 6 foot of concrete and steel between us and the scanner. You didn't want to be in the same room when it was turned on, and you really wouldn't want to be within 100 yards of the X-ray beam. It's pretty tough science that we're dealing with on this face.
Now, Dr. Manning, this is going to be shown to all of us in National Geographic this weekend. I know there's been a bit of controversy within the scientific community about showing the public this research before it's been published in peer-reviewed papers. How did this timing work out, and What do you have to say about that?
Oh, we're not actually showing the research. What we are showing is the actual discovery. The research, we had a paper published in the Royal Society last month on maximum running speeds using evolutionary robotics in dinosaurs. This is what we've been applying to understand the locomotor ability of our animal.
And didn't you find that it is faster than a T-Rex?
Well, the model that we used and published the other month did come up with a speed much faster than T-Rex.
I like that image of the hadrosaur running away.
Look at it from this point of view. The hadrosaur was running for its life. T-Rex was just running for its dinner. So there's good evolutionary sense to be able to outrun the top predator that's going to be preying upon you. There is a big research program which is ongoing, and we have one paper which is currently in review, and we also have two papers ready to go and many papers in preparation. This is a very unusual situation where we worked very closely with National Geographic, the Society, the television folks, and the book people right from the beginning of the project. Very often you find science documentaries are retrospective, on things which have been done years ago.
And a lot of people saying, when we found this, it looked like... Yeah.
Precisely. This is as close as you can get to live science. It's thrilling, exciting, it's good fun. And I think it's a wonderful way of engaging many people with our science. And that is really what all scientists in this field want to do, because it's a fantastic field. We love what we do. We're, as paleontologists, we are some of the luckiest folks on the planet to be able to practice something which most people dream of doing, and I do not take that for granted. I'm very grateful for the work that I'm able to do.
Well, I can tell. It's rare to talk to someone who is as passionate and enthusiastic about his work as a 7-year-old.
So. Yes, I still have that bit of growing up to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Dr. Philip Manning is a scientist, a paleontologist who has worked on Dakota, who is a dino mummy, is what they're calling it. You can see pictures of Dakota on our show page at WNYC.org. Be sure to check it out.